Thank you for listening to the Pet Peeves Podcast, hosted by me, comedian Albert Escobedo. I am a registered veterinary technician and not a doctor, so please consult your private veterinarian before taking my advice. Thank you and enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 3 of the Pet Peeves Podcast Q&A, where we ask our favorite registered veterinary technician and local Los Angeles stand-up comedian, Albert Escobedo. Albert, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Tuesday, I'm here with you, Michael Beagley.
We're gonna
making
talk
magic.
Going to talk a little bit about our pets.
Animal lovers out there, this is for you. Happy Mother's Day to all the pet moms out there and human moms out there. But don't forget the pet moms. Happy Pet Mom Day. Did you know today's Mexican Mother's Day?
I didn't know Mexican Mother's Day was on a Tuesday.
I did not know. Actually, it's probably just May 10th, but I learned that today. So for everybody who didn't know, you learned other things on the Pet Peeves Podcast.
Man, I don't know what they did in Korea on Sunday because Albert and I met in Korea. In Korea, it was Buddha's birthday last Sunday, right? And you know, Buddha's birthday is like a crazy holiday over there, right?
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And Mother's Day. How do you reconcile that?
I don't know. What's more important? Mothers? Probably mothers.
I mean, yeah, knowing in Korea. Yeah, probably mothers. Yeah. Buddha, get in line. All right. Albert, let's get going with these questions. What do you say?
For sure. For sure. Buddha had a mother, I think. Yeah, let's get into it. Let's answer some questions.
We got 10 more questions. So we gathered these questions, guys, from Google. We look up the most popular pet and animal related questions in the Google sphere. So we're trying to answer some relevant things you guys might be searching for and using Albert's expertise. Also, don't forget to send us your questions. Please write us at petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and hear what kind of questions you might have about your pets or if you're just curious about something.
Yes, that's the point of all this, people. Ask us questions. We're getting the questions from Google right now. That's fine, but it's pretty, you know, it's indirect. So
yeah.
Send us some questions, something that you guys really want some expert advice on. You could go to your vet. You could, but that costs money.
Yeah, it's a free podcast.
This is free.
Spotify is cheaper than real medicine. No, just joking. Yeah, you saw that disclaimer at the beginning, you know? So first question, Albert, is it ethical to keep pets?
This is a tough question. Is it ethical to keep pets? No. No.
Just no.
No, it's not. But we do it anyway. So but the point is, well, it's debatable, right? I mean, it depends on the situation. It depends on the pet. It depends on the person. It depends on the environment. But I would say in general, I'm kidding. It's ethical to keep pets if it's in the pet's best interest. If you know and you believe that the pet is better off, the animal's better off with you than the alternatives. But it depends on the animal, right? Like if you have a pet fish, it's kind of a little bit harder to argue. But then a pet dog, I think dogs are very domesticated. A fish, it's hard. It's really hard to say. But like a bird in a cage, because birds fly. Like a dog you could take for walks, you can let in the backyard. A bird in a cage generally just stays in the cage. A turtle in a terrarium generally stays in the terrarium. You know, things like, it depends. It's very hard to answer that question. But my first instinct is in an ideal world, we would have like working animals, you know, like you would have a working animal, not just a pet that just sits in your apartment. But I know that pet in the apartment, for some people, that's their whole world. So it's like, is it ethical to keep a pet? Yes. If it's making somebody happy and that person is providing a life for that pet that is better than that animal's alternatives.
Mm-hmm. No, that's well said. That's well said. I guess it depends. On a case-to-case basis, huh?
Always. Yeah. I mean, it's always gray area, but I don't know. It's really hard to say, especially when it comes to things like fish and birds, because the ocean is pretty ginormous. And most dogs, I guess we're talking about ocean fish versus lake fish, whatever. But most like dogs and cats, even if you let them out in the world, you know, they're still like hanging around people most of the time. They're still around people. But birds don't seem to like us too much, and neither do fish.
Well, and if you can give a mammal shelter, you know, you can provide them with one of their needs, regular food, nutrition, trips to the doctor, trips to the vet. You know, this is you're providing them with their needs. And then if you can give them companionship and a bit of exercise, that might be an improved life based on better than a feral dog might have. Yeah. Maybe not like a wolf in Northern Canada, but like, you know, I think a dog's going to have it. Plus dog breeds have gotten to the point where can many of them even live in the wild? I think some of them can, the working dogs, you know.
What I've seen in third world countries, the same dog that people have in their house here is living on the streets in other countries and faring just fine for itself. Small Chihuahuas, Labradors, Shepherds, Rottweilers.
Do you see that in Thailand when you were
working out
there?
I've seen it in Thailand and in Mexico.
Okay. Interesting.
So it's like, I know that they can fare well. And even in the United States, like there's packs of wild chihuahuas in Arizona that terrorize
neighbors.
Packs of
wild chihuahuas in Arizona?
Look it up. It is a hilarious story because I just got a picture, a bunch of chihuahuas attacking people's ankles, and it makes me giggle. But I'm sure it's terrifying to the people.
Okay. And when I edit the video, I'll have to look this up and post something. I'll have to put that up there.
So even a chihuahua, obviously not by itself, they're little packs like piranhas. You know, they're not fending by themselves. They're smart enough to gather in packs.
But the fish, I mean, the fish has got to be thinking, hey, I can do this on my own. I can do this fairly well on my own, you know?
Yeah. The fish is, I don't know.
And birds? Like, that one's tricky. That one's tricky.
I have fish too. I have my betta and I look at him and he seems happy. They say there's ways to tell if your fish is happy. They make little bubbles at the top of the water. And they make like bubble patches.
Yeah.
And that's how you know they're living well.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe he'd probably be happier in the water with some other, other fish, like in a big old natural environment. So is it ethical? I don't know. What do you think? Is it always case by case? Is there any yes and no to this?
I mean, I think most of our existence these days is not very ethical. I mean, there's so many things. I was taking out my glass recycling, right? On the surface there, that sounds pretty good, right? Taking my glass recycling.
Yeah,
doing my
start.
Doing my no, it's not good enough. I should be taking the bottles to a bottle like receptacle place so that they can just reuse the bottles. Because actually, when you take your glass, you melt it down and that takes a lot of energy. And what is energy? I mean, that's like burning coal and burning gas to create new glass. And a lot of glass is just thrown away. So am I doing the right? It seems like I'm doing the right thing, right? I'm recycling. It seems like you're doing the right thing. You're rescuing an animal. But if you don't do a very good job at it, then we talk about that a lot on the Pet Peeves podcast.
Who is this pet owner? Is it ethical? I guess it depends on a lot on who is the pet owner, right?
Yeah.
And then is it necessarily, I don't know, are they better off as wild in the wild? What if we just let them all out? What if we just let them all out? All the dogs,
jailbreak.
All the cats, all the animals in the zoo.
Pandemonium.
Let them all out.
Well, hey, that's another question. We haven't had many zoo questions yet because, you know, you don't currently work at a zoo. So
I do not work at a zoo.
You know, but is it ethical to keep pets? I think there's a lot of debate over, you know, what's the more ethical thing for more exotic animals? Is it keeping them in a zoo? Is it because there's a lot of endangered species for whom they would be extinct if it weren't for zoos and captive breeding programs, you know? So some good can come from zoos, but keeping more exotic animals, predators in enclosed spaces, it's not healthy for them.
No, it's got to be super stressful for them. Then you got to think about the difference between an animal born in the wild and an animal born in captivity. That's going to make a big difference too, and on their mental side. But even maybe not as much as I think. Maybe their instincts are super strong. And those predators, like you said, are going to be born in captivity and just feel off at all times, know something is wrong at all times, be stressed and anxious at all times, never get enough exercise, never get enough stimulation, never get proper environmental engagement. You know, it's super sad, the zoo to me. When I was a kid, I thought it was awesome. But now as I look back at it, it's like, well, it's pretty sad. But now we have the internet. I could just watch, you know, nature is
David
metal.
Attenborough movies. Nature's metal. Yeah.
On Instagram or whatever, a David Attenborough documentary and get a lot out of that as well. So maybe the zoos aren't as necessary as they used to be. 4D virtual reality stuff maybe is alternative. Yeah.
Well, I think we've come a long ways because, I mean, even zoos were a step in the right direction from circuses. So, you know, I think we've kind of evolved slowly on this. But I think a lot of people who, and I'm not educated enough on this to have an argument, but some of the arguments I've heard are about just giving funding to safaris in Africa, for example, for your lions and your tigers, et cetera, for your exotic animals, gorillas, et cetera. That if you just fund them, they can fight off poachers and just give them plots of land that are their natural habitat, elephants, so that they can, you know, breed, live, hunt, be hunted naturally. And
that sounds good.
Yeah. And then it can even be paid for with tourism. You know, you can go on safari and observe from afar, you know, in a Jeep. And those animals are not in captivity, but there is a perimeter around them that is policed.
Yeah, so. They can do that for dogs and cats, right? Have you heard of Cat Island and Dog Island or whatever?
In China, Cat Islands, yeah.
There's Cat Island in, is it China? I thought it was Japan.
It could be both, yes. Maybe I both. Mean, there's also deer. Remember, there's deer in Japan that there's kind of roam around. There was one in Kyoto, like in all the deer in Kyoto.
I don't know about
those
that.
Those deer don't look super healthy, though. They look fat because a bunch of tourists give them way too much junk. But yeah, there's like wild deer. They're wild, but they definitely walk up to you and want snacks. So how wild are they, you know?
Yeah, but look, I think that one up. That's work. In Kyoto.
Yeah.
That like the Dog Island and the Cat Island. Like, what if that was our alternative to pets? If you really want to hang out with dogs and cats, go move to the island and they all live outside.
Is it ethical to keep pets? Do you think people... Maybe it's like an asymptotic relationship. We're never truly ethical. We might approach, but we never truly get to that point where we just say, check, yes, that's ethical. So it's always kind of varying degrees of gray, no. But having said that, do you think people are more concerned with this than they used to be? I think there's a different attitude right now, at least among the pet owners that I know, bordering on obsession. We kind of treat them like our children.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's how people are going to rationalize having the pet, even though, you know, logically, you don't need one. You know, you don't need a pet, usually, unless you have like a working animal, a service animal. But if you don't need a pet and you're getting one purely for the enjoyment of it, purely for the sake of rescuing something from the shelter, I think people are doing more research these days. They're less likely to... And that's not even true. Is that even true? Maybe people are more educated about it. They do more research, but they still make the same kinds of choices since I've been in veterinary medicine. And if you look at statistics, veterinary medicine is a growing field. It's not a shrinking field. Veterinary hospitals are more busy now than ever because so many people got pets during the pandemic. So many people used that free time to go out and get a puppy or a kitten or to foster or to whatever. And they've picked up an animal in their house. So it's not like, people, even if they're educated and even if they feel some kind of moral dilemma, they're still choosing to get pets. That's probably going to continue to grow. I don't know how, you know, I think nowadays with people having more access to technology and spending more time online, having less human interaction, getting a pet makes sense. You're going to have something that you can care about, something that's warm and, you know, eats and sleeps and that you can share affection with that's not, you know, doesn't take up a whole lot of your attention and time. You don't have to remember its birthday. You don't have to buy it anything if you don't want to, you know, so there's not a whole lot of, you know, what would you call it? It's not equal. It's not an equal relationship like you would have with your significant other. No matter how much you love your dog, it's not equal to a human relationship that would be in your life. Yeah. So I think a lot of people are using pets that way these days. So as ethical or unethical as it may be, People rationalize.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter the species. People have all kinds of pets these days. It seems like the variety of pet is even increasing because people have more information on how to take care of those pets. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing it online. They're seeing the exotics. They're seeing the, you know, the less typical pets online going viral because they're strange. And then people want that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think I keep going back to your bearded dragon as being, you know, an interesting pet from my perspective. So, yeah.
Yeah. And is it ethical for me to have him? Yes, because he's spoiled. That's why. Next question.
Which pets are good with kids?
Which pets are good with kids? I don't know. Depends. Are they good kids or bad kids?
Most kids are terrible.
Which pets are good with kids? I don't know. Ones that don't bite. But all pets, anything with teeth bites.
Yeah.
So it depends. What do you consider a kid? Less than 5? Less than 10? Less than 15?
Yeah, any more these days. I'd say kind of less than 10, but also less than 26. Like, it just depends, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I really think kids and pets are a tough mix. It is a tough, tough mix. There has to be an adult involved. I don't care what the pet is, a fish, mm-hmm. a gerbil, a hamster, a dog, a cat, mm-hmm. a goat, a horse, a pig. It doesn't matter to me. There's got to be some adult involved, because I don't think kids really understand the danger that they mm-hmm. are in when they're around animals, that they can be hurt or hurt the animals accidentally. Mm-hmm. Animals can hurt you accidentally. You can hurt an animal accidentally. You know, people hurt their animals accidentally all the time. So what pets are good with kids? I would say pets that don't die easily. That's something that you can kind of lean on.
Yeah.
Something that's not going to die very easily. So anything really small, it's probably not great for a kid, because they're going to accidentally kill it. And something that lives a long time, maybe not for a kid. So like we talked about before, rats as a first pet, they're easy to take care of. They live a relatively long to short period of time. You know, maybe, what did we say? Like 8 years or something like that for a rat. Yeah. So I think those are pretty good pets. And then, I like dogs and cats for a kid. If they have people in their lives that have experience with dogs and cats, help them take care of it. I don't know. What do you think?
I think we talked about Ricky before, who has a ton of betta fish, and they have two cats and a dog and an apartment, and they do a really good job of exercising their pets. They have a really good pet life. It's kind of a jungle in their place. A lot of plants too that are healthy for pets. So it's just definitely like a jungle vibe when you visit.
That's cool.
And he was telling me this story. I'm going to butcher his story because I'm not him, but it was about a 1.5-year-old. And the 1.5-year-old was like a family friend child. And the child was in their home with their two cats and a dog. And their two cats and dog have an interesting dynamic. The one cat and dog like play fighting all the time. And then the other cat, who kind of runs the household, doesn't like any of it, but loves humans. Anyways, it was fascinating because this 1.5-year-old, he said, had a dog and a cat in this baby's home. And even though the baby couldn't verbally communicate with humans, even though like there wasn't that, the baby knew animals. And when one of the cats was coming in and kind of getting in his face, or the dog, the baby just kind of went, ugh, like that. Like, the baby was comfortable with the animals, knew the animals, kind of knew what to do with them. And it's like it was intuitive, because it was a thing where I guess what I'm trying to say is, which pets are good with kids? To me, the answer is take the risk, raise your baby with, you know, a cat or a dog or both. And then when they get at a certain age, and even at 1.5, you start to see some behaviors where they're comfortable around animals. You know, when I was a young child, we had a dog. It's interesting you talk about pets dying. Our dog got really sick pretty early on and had to be put down. And I'm sitting here in like second grade learning about pet death for my first time. And that was like a really good life lesson, you know, because then a couple of years after that, my grandmother and my grandfather died within 6 months of each other. And it's like, I know a pet's not the same, but at least I'd gone through that before.
No, it's good. It's like that Louis C.K. joke. It's practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dead dog is practice for grandma.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sick joke, but it's sick. It's funny because it's very true. That was
it is. No, I've seen 100%. Using pets as a microcosm for life in general makes sense. It is a living thing, and I think plants as much. People disregard plants, but I don't. I think plants are alive, and they need food and water and care, and they need sunlight, and they need to be appreciated. And also, is it ethical to keep plants? Is a conversation. Would a tree rather be in the park than in my, plants that are in my little patio here? Would they rather be out in the park or in the jungle?
Is it ethical to be a human in 2022? I think it's kind of tricky. Not. It's probably not.
Is it ethical to Yeah, man.
Where did my t-shirt come from? Right, it's probably not ethical, you know? So, right. Yeah.
Whoever you're listening to this podcast probably has, you know, child labor somewhere.
Right. Probably the headphones I'm using are terrible right. too, you know? So, great entertainment, Albert. We're really helping the people forget whatever they're trying to procrastinate from right now. Good job. Getting existential on question two. But which pets are good with kids? I think we've been talking a lot about responsibility. And yeah. You said something earlier, you got to keep an adult involved. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think my parents would wanted me to walk the dog, and I did not walk the dog as much as I should have when I was 9-10 years old. And I just, you know, I'm not blaming my parents, but what I'm saying is, I guess you got to kind of like, I don't know, put a calendar on the refrigerator. I'm just spitballing here, but just something like something where you get a check mark. Maybe you get a reward if you walk the dog. Like, I don't know. You have to teach the child responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
You can't just. And so it's kind of, we're kind of replaying one of the questions we had in the previous week, but which pets mm-hmm. are good with kids? I think the responsibility issue kind of comes in here too. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you have to have like the adult that teaches the kid. The kid has to have some pet experience, some animal experience, and then you can have a general idea if this kid is good with a pet. There's going to be some kids that are, and some kids that aren't, and some kids that want to have pets but aren't going to be good at it, and some kids that don't want pets but would be great at it. So it's like you have to allow the kids to choose. I think we mentioned that in the other episode too, that they have to volunteer for that type of responsibility. You can't just put a living thing in a kid's hands and say, you have to take care of this. They're never going to do it right. They're never going to do a good job. That pet's going to cause you more problems than it's worth. So you have to have the adult that has experience teach the kid as much as possible and hope that kid's on board. If the kid is not, either it's on you as the adult to take care of the pet or look for a new home for that pet. That's what I tell people. When people really, you know, they have a trouble with the pet and the kids, obviously you should choose your kids. Choose your kids over the pet.
Yeah.
I don't think that's super debatable. People might be mad at me for that. Find another home for that pet. There's all these opportunities for us to post pets that need a home online. And if you put enough effort into it, you can rehome pets. We do it all the time.
On the other hand, you said that there's a big uptick in that during COVID where families will get a pet for a little while. And then now that COVID's over, like, oh, we don't have time. And they give the pet back.
Yeah.
Like in an individual case, that's understandable, but massively, like it's become sad. Kind of an issue. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think like the shelters are always full to the brim. So,
okay. So what's
pre-COVID,
the difference?
Yeah. Post-COVID, during COVID, yeah. There's always an issue. Always an issue. So spay and neuter your pets, you know, trap, neuter, and return. These are all ways to prevent that. But as far as acclimating your child to being around animals, I think start at a young age, introduce them to the horse, introduce them to the cow, bring them around pigs, take them to the zoo, take them to the petting zoo, bring them around your friends that have big dogs, little dogs, cats, whatever, chickens, and let them see all that. And if they're a kid, like I was a kid, the ones that really love animals will gravitate towards it. And then, you know, I went to school with a lot of people who love animals, and a lot of them don't work with animals anymore. That's just like those kids. Give them enough exposure, or they're going to choose for themselves.
Well, you can reduce the fear of animals, I think, by taking away the fear of the unknown, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Next question. Can you get a pet for free? Who's asking this question?
I don't know. If you're searching free pet online, you definitely have bad credit.
You're sub 500.
I just think that that's a horrible thing to search for. Can you get a pet for free? That somebody's Googling that. I understand that you're looking for a way to obtain an animal that's not going to break your bank. I get that. But I don't know. Free pet just screams problems to me. Just screams problems. Like, don't get me wrong. I've got my first dog that I ever had, Chewy. I got him for free. I was, a young kid. I was in college. I was maybe 20. And all signs pointed to know that I did not deserve that pet. Mm-hmm. I didn't have enough stability. But I got the dog for free, which is not how you should start off that kind of relationship. I think it sets you up for poor expectations because everything else revolving around that pet is not going to be free.
Mm-hmm.
So there was times when I was a college student that I had a hard time feeding my dog. I had a hard time finding pet sitters. I had a really hard time because I didn't have any stability. So I think free pet, somebody searching that is screaming somebody that doesn't have a whole lot of stability. But I know I could be wrong because people are getting adopted pets and shelter pets for free. I understand that. And that's fine, but there's going to be some cost involved. I've been involved in a lot of adoption and there's costs involved. Foster, there's costs involved. Even if you're not paying for the pet, you're paying for something involved with that. So I don't know. I don't know. I do not like that as a search, you know, as like a hashtag free pet.
Oh yeah. I mean, and unless it's Free Willy, then that's okay. But
yeah,
I
free them from captivity. Yeah. Better.
I think this is, you know, something that you've ranted about before, in your comedy special even, was about people getting pet insurance to kind of help with these, to mitigate the costs. Like, let's maybe have you elaborate on the reality of the costs of going for regular vet checkups and just anticipating. It's kind of like a, you know, you get your pet health insurance, but you have to kind of almost have a savings account aside too, to anticipate. Maybe can you just elaborate on this? Like, yeah, from your perspective as a vet tech, the cost involved with having, you know, a dog, a cat, and maybe some of the more exotic animals too. Go ahead.
I think it's simplified. It's like human insurance in the way that you buy packages based on ages. It's all age based. So like for humans, the older you are, the more expensive the insurance is. Same thing for animals. So the idea for pet insurance is that you get the insurance when you first get your pet, when it's very young and healthy, has no underlying conditions. So that's going to cost you not a lot of money. For my dog and cat, when they were both a year or less, it was like $35 a month total for two pets. And like you said, it only covers, it reimburses you. It only covers emergencies, number one. So it didn't cover anything routine. No vaccines, no examinations, nothing like that. It was just for emergencies. And it would just reimburse you. Whatever you pay, they will pay you back. So that was great for me. I thought that was an excellent option, but it does require me to save up some money. The other kind of options are more like packages that do include wellness visits, dewormer, vaccine, spay, neuter, but those are more wellness packages. So there's different ways to look at it. I think if you are going to the same vet for your pet's whole life, those veterinarians usually have puppy packages, adult packages, senior packages, kitten package, you know, same thing, adult package, senior cat package. And those are worth it. But if you're traveling or you don't live in the same place for a long time, pet insurance is definitely worth it. Every time you go to the animal hospital, you're going to pay an exam fee. That exam fee is going to be $30, $40, $50. And an emergency hospital is going to be $90, $100, $110, $120 just to be looked at. And then you got to pay for whatever procedures they do. Then you have to pay for whatever diagnostics they do. Then you have to pay for whatever surgery they're going to want to do. Then you have to pay for whatever drugs they're going to want to send home. And then they're going to charge you for time, and they're going to charge you for miscellaneous things that they're just going to add. So all that adds up and adds up and adds up. So if you're taking your dog or cat to the vet regularly, twice a year as normal, you're going to spend at least $100 every time you go. And if your pet gets sick, you're probably going to spend $200 to $500, I would say, on average, if your pet gets sick. And if your pet needs surgery, even routine surgery, you're spending in the $300, $400, $500, $600, $700 range, depending how large your animal is or what that routine surgery is. There's nothing cheap about it. Dog food and cat food is like human food. Quality food is expensive. Low quality food is cheap. Your pet's going to get sick and fat, and then you're going to have to deal with those issues, diarrhea, high blood sugar, diabetes, you know, arthritis.
Yeah, just all the obesity related. Yeah.
Everything weight related. Yeah. So if we're just talking about like prices in general, pets are not cheap animals. But if you live in places like I do in Los Angeles, there's a lot of options to support the community and taking care of their pets. There's a lot of options, but it does require you to have to prove your income, right? So if you go to the shelter and you say, I don't have any food for my pet, they'll give you free food if you can prove that you don't have any money. So that's another like hard thing for people to swallow their pride and go ask for help like that. Because in reality, a lot of people are making poor money choices. That's why they don't have money for their pets. They're making other bad choices with their money. That's a lot of the problem. I know that's not everybody. That's a lot of the people. So that, you know, I think it's like the same people that are searching free pet online are the same people spending their rent money on beer or whatever, you know, just things that they don't need to prioritize. So it's kind of that, you know, these pet costs, they're never hidden. You should just assume it's like a child. The costs are going to come from everywhere. And even if you try your hardest, everything gets sick, everything gets injured. So you're going to have to end up in the vet hospital eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. I know some of the prices that you mentioned, in my experience, they're just slightly inflated by like even, you know, 30, 40, 50% beyond that. And there's a difference in currency, but honestly, the euro is pretty similar to the dollar right now. It's not bad. It's just stuff's expensive. Stuff's expensive. Yeah. And maybe we go to a slightly more expensive vet because it's the city that we're in. But I think it's just
Only mentioned routine stuff. I didn't mention anything complicated.
Yeah, we did like routine stuff, vaccines, and I think I spent $240. I think maybe there was a bag of food involved in that too, but like still, you know, and that to me, I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Like you're performing medicine.
Yeah.
You have you have all the training, like the equivalent of that for human medicine is, oh my goodness. Like it's, you guys are operating at the margins. There's some awfully fancy equipment in these places. These are highly trained individuals. Like but at the same time, like Kate, my wife and I, we avoided we got both our cats for free, but that's not because I Googled, can you get a pet for free? It's because they stumbled into our lives. It's just the nature of cats in Brussels. There's a lot of stray cats.
The normal way to get a free pet is you see it walking down the sidewalk and you try to find its owner and you can't.
They literally walked into the window and then we went on a search for the owner.
That's how you get a free pet.
Turns out we have a cat, you know? So
when a pet starts following you home, day after day after day, now you got a free pet.
But we were at the point where we had the budget and we had thought to ourselves, I think I told this story in a previous podcast, so I'll try to keep it short. But the point is, we looked at each other and said, okay, we can get a pet. And then a pet found us, you know, but we went without, mostly because of our travel schedule. Like we just left the country a lot. We were moving from country to country a lot. And we just thought, we're like, we love animals, but this factor, the way our lifestyle is going right now, makes us bad candidates for adoption. So it just, you know, I think you got to be honest with yourself. If you're Googling that question, if you're sitting on your phone, on your sofa, you're Googling that question.
Free. How do I get a free pet?
Maybe you should Google something instead, like,
why don't you Google, how do I get a job? Or
give me a sample budget PDF for an animal in a month, you know, like,
yeah, that's what people need to do. Really do some research. Like how much is this pet going to cost you in a week versus a month versus a year?
Yeah.
And you're going to see that it's a lot. And then you got to factor in what happens if they get sick or injured. And like you said, if your pet needs a dental, now you're talking about $1,000 to $2,000 just off of that. And that's probably in everybody's pet's future. At some point, they're going to need a dental. Mm-hmm. And people don't know. And then they come to the animal hospital and they're all shocked by the costs. And we're like, well, did you do any research before you got your pet of the long-term investments, monetary investments that come with pet care? If not, you're going to have a pet with a horrible mouth by the time it's a senior, and it's going to affect that animal's whole life, quality of life, and yours. Mm-hmm. And you did nothing about it because you didn't know. And that's your fault. You should do some research.
Which pets are the best to have in your room?
The best pet to have in your room is one that can keep secrets. What do you think about that?
I mean, they're within earshot, right? Or they're deaf?
Yeah. I don't know. Quiet ones. Yeah. That's the quiet ones can keep secrets. They can't talk. I don't know. What can keep in your room? It's a weird question. I guess something small, something that can be kept that doesn't make a big mess. I don't know. We're back to rats, gerbils, hamsters, ferrets. Like fish. To keep in your room only. Yeah, fish. I always forget to think about fish that just sits in your room all day. I don't know, something that doesn't need a whole lot of attention. Cause I don't know how much time people spend in their bedroom, but I don't spend a lot in mine. But I did at different times in my life. Also, that depends who is the person with the pet.
Yeah.
What did you ever have a room pet in your room?
No, man. No. No.
I had a tarantula. When I just had
like a tarantula. Okay. That's good.
I had a tarantula when I was in college and he just sat in my room.
I had a roommate that had fish, though. I thought that was reasonable.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know. A sugar glider, fish. What stays in a cage? Even the most exotic things I've seen. Hedgehogs, something like that. But even then, if it just sits in your room, I hope it's got a buddy. I hope it's in there with something else.
But then I knew someone recently that had like a rabbit. That had a rabbit. And so there was
rabbit.
A cage, hamster. And then they let the rabbit out in the room when the person was home? And
so that's what the question is. Is it like something that you can let run around? Is it something that you just keep in one place?
Yeah, like a tarantula, right? Just let it run around, no problem.
Yeah. The tarantula I would put on my shirt and he would kind of crawl across and it would freak people out, but he was really gentle. He was a pink haired tarantula and he had big old fangs, but he was not poisonous. And they said his fangs weren't very powerful. Like he could make you bleed, but he couldn't really hurt you, but he never bit anybody. He never bit anybody. He was never aggressive. Well, might've been female. I have no idea, but it was really a pretty interesting pet. Pink hair, and it would crawl on your chest and we'd put it on our heads and we'd have people come over and we'd freak them out and put it on their shoulder. And but after a while, like all my friends came over and we'd be more comfortable with it. That was my first exotic before the beardy.
That's cool, man.
So that's not a bad room pet.
Yeah, it's about the right size.
Yeah, maybe like insects. People have insects for pets. You know what's interesting that I just saw last week? I went to the pet store to buy crickets for my beardy, and the guy had baby praying mantises. Manti. I don't know how to say it. But he said that he had a female and a male that did the thing and then made babies. And then the female ate the male, bit his head off, just like in the documentaries. Like,
yeah.
And then she died right after that. She had laid like 7 egg packages. And he said like 3 of them ended up hatching.
Wow.
And he showed me in the cup. It was a cup with all these little tiny baby praying mantises. And they were so small. Tiny little praying mantises that from a distance it looked like ants. They look like little ants, but a closer inspection, they're fully developed praying mantises, but they're just microscopically small, just tiny, tiny little things, black and amazing. Like, I'm like, man, that's a cool pet. I could have a praying mantis as a pet. I think that would be cool. Like, and you said it's the ones that look like sticks when they get bigger.
They look like sticks when they like walking sticks when they get bigger.
Yeah, exactly. That this species of praying mantis, even though when I saw it, it was black. So when they get older, they look like sticks.
Huh.
And I'm like, man, that's cool. That's a cool pet. And I bet you could keep that in your room as long as you keep it fed. Maybe you have a cool terrarium, like tropical style.
What about an ant farm? Are ant farms ethical?
I read not. Did we talk about this before?
I don't think so.
Oh my God. I heard This American Life podcast. You ever listen to that one? This American Life?
Yeah, of course.
So I was listening to This American Life podcast and they talked about a guy who, I wish I could remember all of it, but it was something like things that changed your trajectory in life, things that you experienced as a kid that changed your trajectory in life.
Yeah.
It was like about a kid who, I don't know what, a family, they were interested in the ant farm, that like a group of kids, like a, you know, two parents and a couple of kids, they wanted the ant farm. They saw it on TV or something and they wanted it. They all wanted it. They were so amped up about it. And then they got it. And then one kid by one lost interest. And then the parents just ended up taking care of it. And then the mom and dad got really interested in it, really into it. And they were really watching what was going on in it. And then they started noticing that the ants started dying one at a time. That as they got really interested and really like invested and really started seeing like this whole, you know, dynamic of a community and colony, that the ants started dying one at a time. Like even though they were fed and even though that they were, you know, had everything that they needed.
Yeah.
And then they did research on it and it turns out like ants without places to go and food to find and like a job to do have no purpose in life and they have way shorter lifespans.
Okay.
And that's like true for us as humans too. Like when a living thing has no purpose, it just dies. Like that's just something that from a depression or sadness or I don't know what it would be from. But that ant farm, apparently, that's like the worst thing you could do to an ant.
Huh.
Trap it between two plastic walls with no.
And that's what I was just going to ask was like, did they describe it in the podcast as two?
Yeah, that they need a queen. Walls.
It was one of those.
Yeah. Oh, it was like, yeah, two, like looks like
one of those
Connect Four.
So there's this guy I follow on YouTube. I think his handle is Ants Canada. And I think homie's from Canada and he likes ants. But anyways, he really likes ants and he makes killer videos. They're very like family friendly. He uses a lot of classical music. It's pretty epic. Pretty cheesy, but I love it. And he loves weaver ants so much that he moved to like, oh man, I'm going to get this wrong. I think he moved to Indonesia. Is Indonesia or the Philippines? I forget. But where these ants are native. Like he was so interested in this stuff and his YouTube channel took off so much. He moved there, actually physically moved there. And he has these like huge terrariums. His house, his biggest room in his house is just built to have awesome ant terrariums. And
how big
just,
are we talking?
I mean, like crazy big fish tank sizes, you know, and the big thing that he does is, and speaking of ethics, is he tries to keep the species separate from one another, you know, because the things he's noticed is there's some invasive species from different continents coming. I think there was like a pharaoh ant and definitely fire ants, and they're just terrible. And they're just wiping out ant species the in indigenous different countries. Yeah. So yeah, he's trying to like
and taking their land.
So yeah, it's one of these things where he's trying to grow colonies of the native species to kind of keep them going. So that's I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure that's better in a larger terrarium, but I think the point of the podcast was that, you know, it's kind of unethical just to keep the ant in walls, even big walls. It's like us as humans. Like, we don't want to, even a big cage is still a cage.
He does some videos outside in his backyard. He also tried to facilitate that in his backyard, but he found that the invasive species were just rotten. But
you could do some cool research. So that's like the ethical part to me, kind of you can wipe away if it's for research purposes. Like we have to learn to grow. So I think having animals in captivity for learning purposes, I can understand like just being okay with it being a little less than ethical.
But scientifically, doesn't that mean that when you apply this to an animal in the wild, that things are going to change from your observations, from your conclusions?
Sure. Equate for that. Account for that.
Yeah, it's the same as psychology. If you do it in a laboratory and then you go out into the real world, like
it's going to be different.
Yeah.
And so I was telling somebody, it's never like in the book.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes, rarely. And then everybody freaks out like, oh my God, look, it looks like in the book.
Which pets are the best to have in your room? A tarantula. I think that's the answer.
Quiet ones. That's what I say.
Which pets can you keep in a tank?
I don't know. What pets can you keep in a tank? I don't know. What kind of tank?
Who's Googling this? This seems pretty obvious, right? Doesn't it?
Like fish, obviously. A fish tank. It's like shark tank. A shark.
Who's keeping a shark? Yeah, I guess some. Yeah.
There's for all the pet sharks out there. Have you ever seen Deuce Bigelow? And the guy's got all those exotic fish.
I mean, I guess a shark is a fish, so you can get a small one. Yeah.
Yeah. There's sharks out there in tanks. I don't know. Does anybody have a pet octopus or I don't know. I went to the aquarium. Those are large tanks. There's whales. I saw a beluga whale show. Dolphins.
That's just
what can you see in a tank? Anything at the aquarium. They're all there. I saw the seahorses. I saw the jellyfish. I saw the seals and sea lions. And what else did I see in there?
Do you guys have a really good aquarium in Los Angeles, or do you go down to San Diego? Or
I have not been to one over here. I heard the one in Long Beach is really nice, but I haven't been there. I've been I went to like a Sea World type place at one of the museums over here. Yeah. But no, I haven't been to an aquarium in a really long time. I went to an aquarium in Korea. That was cool. I've been to the aquarium in Chicago a bunch of times, but not over here.
I went to the one in Chicago. That's a great one. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and I did go to one in San Diego. A it's really a long
Shea
time ago.
Aquarium, I think, in Chicago. Oh, yeah. Isn't that right?
Yeah. The Shea Aquarium. Shed.
Shed Aquarium. Shed. I thought the D was silent. Yeah. We went to Valencia, and I am what the Spanish call a shrimp. I have translucent skin, and I sat on the beach the first day, and I became red like an Ohio State shirt. Yeah, that's just, oh gosh, it's terrible. And so we needed to find, that's what they call them. That's what they call them, but in Spanish. And is that what it is? Camarón. That's I think it's a nice, it's like, hey, cute tourist. Yeah, we know. Day one, you're on the beach, right? 45 SPF, right? Good luck.
Heck yeah, for sure.
Didn't work. So anyways, I was suffering. So we needed to do something outside of the sunlight on day two. And so we went to this huge aquarium.
So funny. Okay.
This is epic building. They actually used that aquarium for the new Bill and Ted movie because just the architecture was phenomenal. Like the outdoor architecture before you go indoors for the aquarium. Yeah, check it out. It's Valencia in Spain. Yeah, really cool aquarium.
Yeah, I think you saw that, the jellyfish. That's something I remember from the
everything
aquarium.
In there. But they had mammals like otters. They had everything.
Yeah, so. That's what I like about the aquarium too. You get to see the seals, the even like polar bears they'll have in an aquarium because they swim so much. Like, yeah, man. What can you keep in a tank? And then insects.
Right.
Small exotic pocket pets, lizards, things like that, I guess. Giant tanks. I would love to have some portion of our podcast one day where we do focus on like exotic pets, like not dogs, not cats, exotics. And another time we do like large farm animals, because maybe there's a lot more animals that live in tanks than I'm even aware of. I go to the pet store. What do they have? What I've already mentioned, but I bet there's more. We're just like limited. Oh, at the place that I get my crickets, he also has a Komodo dragon, a big Komodo back there. In a small tank for how big it is. And then he's got other lizards, like giant lizards, iguanas too, like these big iguanas, big lizards, and they live in these tanks and they're really freaking cool. I would love to have something like that if it were friendly enough, like my beardy, that you could take it out and let it walk around.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I think we're already starting to, with these Q&A sessions, I think we're starting to really cover a lot more exotics than I anticipated. You know, I thought this was going to be a little bit more dog cat talk and, but no, I think you should go to the farm and like interview some cows and things, you know?
Yep. I want to. Moo, moo, moo.
Which pets have short lifespans? Last week we asked which pets have the longest lifespan, but which pets have short lifespans? I wonder who asked this question.
The pets with short lifespans are the pets with the worst owners. The worse owner you are, the shorter your pet is going to live, for sure. Like, this is sad but true, because there's always like a range when you look it up, right? Like, how long is the pet going to live? It's always like 4 to 8 years, because that's like, well, it depends on you, dummy. You know, most of the time when people ask me a lot of questions about their pet that has already had some sort of a crazy accident at home, you know, something that happened at home with them, is usually gross negligence. And it's never their fault. Like, I have an aunt who tried to give her rabbit a bath. And if you can't give rabbits baths, they get too cold. They get too cold. You can't give a rabbit, it's got the wrong kind of fur. And I know you can wash a rabbit, but you don't know how, then you're going to cause some problems. So it's like little things like that. A lot of cats end up in washing machines and people turn it on.
What?
Because they didn't know that their cat was in the washing machine. But cats.
Oh, right. Because the cat goes anywhere the cat can go
in there. Yeah. It was open. The cat climbed in and
that makes sense.
Closed the lid and turned it on. That happens. So I get gross negligence as a thing. So that's usually cutting lifespan. And then, you know, you got outdoor pets, it's going to shut down. If you got some kind of viruses around you and you're not protecting your pets with vaccines, they're going to have a shorter lifespan. But what pets have actual short lifespans? I'm pretty sure anything big, like the bigger dogs, have short lifespans, like large breed dogs, Great Danes, Mastiffs, Dobermans. Anything that's like over 60 pounds, 80 pounds, like those dogs have 10-year lifespans. Mm-hmm. If you have a dog that weighs more than 80 pounds, 10-year lifespan. Mm-hmm. Dogs that are 50, 60 pounds, maybe you can get to that 11, 12, 13-year range, but that's even really, really old for those dogs. But if you're looking for something that lives more like a year or two, then you're talking like fish and like
mice,
hamsters and gerbils and mice and I think rabbits live more like 5 years. My bearded dragon's supposed to live like 8 to 10 years. Birds live, you know, like parrots and all them live a long time. But regular, like little birds, not parakeets, but sparrows or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about birds. They live a pretty short time, I think. Have you had any pets that lived a short time?
That's why I was laughing so much, because my dog died early on in its life from just, you know, health problems. But and then the cat we had for 3 years, but that cat was 9. So I was laughing because you were roasting me for my gross negligence.
No, what did you do wrong? You didn't do anything wrong.
No, but exactly. That's what you said. You said the pet owners say that. I didn't do anything wrong. So
no, but you really didn't. I'm talking about people who accidentally turned on the washing machine. Like even that, did they really do something wrong? I don't know. I almost shut the dresser drawer on my cat's head the other day. My cat goes up into the back of the dresser.
Yeah.
And I was trying to shut it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't. I thought there was like some clothes or something in the way, but it was my cat. And she was like, "Row!" She freaked out. I could have easily like crushed her head and hurt her really badly, you know, because I was pushing hard. I was like, why is it not shutting?
We have one of those like captain's beds, you know, you can get them where the drawers are kind of built in underneath the bed, right?
Yeah.
And so I have my drawers on my side. Kate has her drawers on her side. And I just, you know, almost every morning I open the drawers and Salty just jumps in one of the drawers. And sometimes I don't notice. And I close the drawer, but I always kind of close them softly now because it just, you never know.
Right.
And she's a tiny little thing. And then she buries herself in the clothes. So you can't really see her. And then suddenly you do hear a meow. And so you just kind of like, oh, my bad, Salty. And you just open it up.
Right.
Same thing with the coat closet. She loves to just, yep. She's a very modern cat. She's hanging out in the closet. You know, we told you, come on out, tell your truth. You know?
I was talking to my boss about that. My boss said that she lost a whole day off because she had accidentally locked her cat in the closet when she went to work. So the cat was in the closet all day and the cat ripped up the closet, made a huge mess in there, went to the bathroom in the closet.
And
she said she just felt bad for the kitty. And then she said, as she's cleaning the closet, the cat went back in there. Like as a terror, like the scene in there looked like the cat had a traumatic worst time of its life and then went right back in. And it's like just my cat too with the dresser drawer. I crush her head, and then the next like 10 minutes later, she's trying to go back up in there again. Like, they don't learn. So it's not always the person's fault. It's not always gross negligence. But short lifespans, I don't know. You want a pet with a short lifespan, get a fish, I guess. What else is out there that's short? Most things live at least like a year. What's short? A year is a long time.
Maybe people are Googling this so that they can avoid it though. Like, I don't know. Or maybe people do want it because they want the low commitment. I don't really know. Yeah. I don't know why.
Because even what we just said, like a 10-year commitment to a dog, that's not that short. So what's a short lifespan to you?
A decade in your life, man. Yeah. That's a huge commitment.
Right.
Where was I 10 years ago? Yeah. 10 years. Like that's the length of my relationship, you know? So, and I'm married now. So, you know, 10 years is a big deal.
Right.
Yeah, we've had big dogs growing up, and they.
What lives a mosquito? A mosquito lives like a day or something. There you go. Get a mosquito. That's your next pet.
Yeah, we adopted a bee once and wanted to bring it back to to health. What was his name? Buzzworth. I think it was Buzzworth. Barnaby Buzzworth. That's what it. Yeah, Barnaby Buzzworth. Name. That was Kate. She named him Barnaby Buzzworth, and we adopted Barnaby Buzzworth, and we tried to nurse him back to health. I don't actually know if it was a he. And he lasted about 24 hours, and then, well, Barnaby, he just disappeared. So I don't know if he moved. That was the goal, right? Was just nurse him back to health so he could fly away. So we gave him some sugar water, you know.
Maybe he flew away. Maybe his spirit flew away.
This one's for you, Barnaby Buzzworth, you know.
Double B.
He went too young. What types of disabilities can pets live with?
What types of abilities can pets live with? I mean, I think a lot of pets live with one eye. A lot of pets live with three legs. A lot of pets live with owners who want to treat them like babies. That's a disability. You should treat your pet like a pet. You treat your dog like a dog, your cat like a cat. Disabilities, I mean, to me, now that I work in this rescue foster world, I'm learning a lot about what makes pets more adoptable or less adoptable, more
interesting,
likely to be viewed online, which ones are going to be more likely to go viral.
It's like Tinder for pets.
It is like that, except for the opposite. It seems like the worst they look in the picture, the worse they look in the picture, the more views they get, the more heartstrings we could pull on.
It's like pity adoption. Okay. Yeah,
absolutely. There's a lot of pity going on. We're leaning into it. I mean, that's just
like
our
you market. Need to do like Derek Zoolander with the trash fashion. Yeah.
Yeah. Just throw dirt on them and then they'll get adopted. But yeah, the cats with one eyes, the dogs with one eyes or no eyes, blind animals do very well. Their senses are off the chain. You know, you can, there's a lot of blind pets online that go viral a lot, you know, cause it's just inspiring, I guess, for your pet that has two eyes that can't catch a Frisbee. You know,
my pet sucks and it has two eyes. Let's try Daredevil. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah, show your pet the blind dog's ability to do stuff, and your dog just lays around on the couch all day. Make him feel bad.
Have you ever had a pet with a disability? Or I haven't.
I mean, no, but I have all these pets at work right now that have a ton of disabilities.
Yeah,
A lot of it is litter box issues for the cats that I work with that are incontinent, either from the rectum or from the urethra.
Okay.
That they have some incontinence that makes it hard for them to find a home because people can't keep up with the cleaning. Mm-hmm. Or pets that are behaviorally disabled, less friendly than they would like to be. Would you call behavior issues a disability? I would, you know, anxiety or stress related behavior issues, or just, you know, not enough socialization with humans is a disability too. They're unable to feel comfortable. They're unable to let their guard down. They're just stressed. Other disabilities from injury or illness, they could live with, you know, I mean, pets are like us. Animals are like us. They're pretty durable. They're pretty resilient. They can make it through a lot. And, you know, and they probably fare better than we do. They don't complain. That's for sure. They're not, not getting addicted to opiates.
You've mentioned a lot of like the result of severe impact injuries and the pet being resilient to that. But what about things like genetic disorders, like Down syndrome? Do pets have genetic disorders as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I see genetic disabilities, but not that often. I would say those are less likely to make it to the adult phase of their life for a lot of reasons. And also, they're, you know, probably not to the extent that humans are, I guess. But you do see genetic disabilities come in the form of cancers, in the form of, I do see animals with like what I would say cognitive deficits. That are something's definitely wrong with them, but there's no way to categorize it. There's no national exam to give them to tell you where they lie on the spectrum. Do you know? It's just like this dog's a little off. And sometimes we call them runty, or we call them, you know, goofy, or whatever you want to call them. Call them chocolate labs, whatever you want to call them. But they're out there, you know, and that they have some deficits in their ability to learn things. But I don't really see it that often. And I think a lot of those animals still get a lot of love and attention. And they still get a lot of affection and, you know, probably less than humans, maybe less, like it happens less often than humans, maybe, but I'm not really seeing it that much. I'm really not. I'm not seeing a whole lot of animals that I would say, oh, this one has Down syndrome, the equivalent of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think?
But I definitely have seen, like, especially purebreds or popular purebreds that have weird genetic problems.
Yeah.
I do see that when they're overly inbred.
Yeah.
See a lot of cancer. I'd say that's more of a disability you're going to get from genetic mutations.
Huh. Which types of pets don't get dander? I think this is an important question. My father-in-law is very allergic to pets in a family who loves animals. So, you know, I think he's always wanted to, he likes animals. He likes being in the room with family members' animals. He likes our cat. My wife's aunt has a dog. Shout out to Rusty. Very good dog. My father-in-law likes being in the room with these dogs, but his eyes start welling up. And like it's, and I think the pet dander must be what he's allergic to. So I think I get why people Google this. Of all our bad questions that we see, like, who's Googling this? What's wrong with you? Actually, this one, and I used to be allergic to cats, and now I'm a happy cat owner, and I can bury my face in my cats. No big deal. I got over my allergy. Not everybody has that experience when they try to get over their allergies, you know? So which types of pets don't get dander, Albert?
Well, allergies are weird, right? But the answer to the question, there are like the curly haired dogs are particularly the ones that are hypoallergenic. The Bichons, the poodle mixes, these like really tight curled pets that have really delicate skin though. They have really sensitive white fur and light skin. So those are the ones that are producing less dander. I don't think it's no dander. It's possibly no dander, but I think it's just low dander and hypoallergenic breeds, they call them. But you know, Papa Benadryl, Papa, what's the other one? The popular one starts with a C.
Claritin.
Claritin, that's the one. Claritin Clear. And then I think you'll be all right. Most people, I think, develop a, what do you call it, a resistance to the allergies. And a lot of the allergies are just because it's something new to your immune system. Your immune system's attacking it like it's something new. But if you get exposed to it over and over again, you're just like a vaccine, you're going to become acclimated. And some people develop allergies when they're young. They don't have allergies. And then as they get older, they develop allergies because they've been exposed to something new and their body kind of freaks out. And for some people, they get over it. For some people, they could take a Benadryl or a Claritin. And some people need allergy injections. Like we have a friend, my wife and I, Diana, her friend is a dog fosterer, like always fostering dogs, one after the other. It's a revolving door. And she's highly allergic. And she has to get allergy injections once a month. Or she can't breathe, she can't see, and it's really intense for her. But she loves these animals so much, she loves the ability to help them so much, that she goes through it. And I work with a lot of people that are allergic to cats. I work at this all cat place. And they just take their Benadryl, or they just blow their nose a lot, or they have the sniffles, and they just deal. So I don't know, which pets don't get dander? I know those kinds of dogs. Cats, what kind of cat breeds? I'm not really sure. I think maybe all cats have some kind of dander. And the other animal breeds as well are other species, I mean. But what don't have dander? What doesn't have fur? Get yourself a bearded dragon. Get back to that fish conversation. Get yourself a, I don't know, a non-furry pet. Then they'll probably be less dander.
Bearded dragon one's really interesting when you talk about your bearded dragon. If you guys check out Q&A episode number 2, we talked about pets who cuddle. And you mentioned how affectionate your bearded dragon can be and how the bearded dragon can just like... can play and run around and jump up on you and all this stuff. Like if you're that allergic, maybe that's an option, you know?
Yeah,
it's
a good option for you.
Until I knew about you having a bearded dragon, that wouldn't have occurred to me.
I was hanging out with him today, right before the recording. He was on my chest and he took a big poopy over there and I had to clean it up. And, you know, but he's funny. Like to me, like he pooped on the cat's toy. Like he did that on purpose. He could have pooped so many places and climbed up. He loves the cat. Him and the cat are best friends.
Yeah.
So I think he like, I don't know, man. He wanted the cat to know that he's around and she has to smell his shit now, his poop.
So there's things you can do, right? You can get an air filter. You can clean your house more often. There's things you can do to try to mitigate it if you do have allergies.
Yeah, those filters do work pretty well. Those HEPA filters, you get one of those air circulating filters and it does help. Because anywhere that we work, like right now, we work in a place with a lot of animals. We have to have heavy ventilation. Or you're gonna breathe all that in either way. So I do, if you have dander allergies, if you have any issues with your, you know, immune system being compromised and you don't want to have to worry about this stuff, maybe wearing a face mask, maybe keeping a couple of filters around.
Yeah.
Because some people love the animal more than they care about their allergy. And I get that. I support that. Don't let it deteriorate your health too much. But if you're one of those diehards, filters are good, masks are good. A lot of cleaning, keep the area really, really clean.
Yep.
That's going to help.
When we adopted our cat, basically there was that question we had last week, when pets come between partners and, Kate really wanted the cat. I said, I'm willing to try, but I am allergic. And I, you know, really was, we had an air filter. We got a robot vacuum. We vacuumed every single day. The bedroom was off limits to the cat, which the cat did not like. Cats don't like being told what to do at all, especially don't enter this room. But then over the course of 3 months, my allergy started dying down. We let the cat into the bedroom. I still was really religious about washing my hands for a good 6 months, never touched my eyes for a good like 9 months. And now it's over. So if you're lucky enough to get over your allergy, you mentioned some people who just aren't. I think there's some things you can do to really help. And now like maybe we should vacuum every day, but we definitely don't. And I'm fine, you know? So yeah.
No, I mean, I don't have any allergies now, but when I was a kid, I was highly allergic to animals. I would break out in hives, highly allergic, but I was an animal freak. Like my mom would tell me, don't touch the animals. And I'd be like, okay. And as soon as she wasn't looking, I'd go touch the animals. And then I'd be all full of bumps and she'd be like, you touched the animals, didn't you? And I'd be like, animals. And she's like, yes, you did. And that happened every single time I touched animals when I was a little kid. I would end up in the emergency room because I would blow up
what?
Like, really bad.
a couple like you need of an times. EpiPen and stuff. My goodness.
Yeah, a couple of times I ended up in the emergency room. A lot of times I ended up with the bumps and they just itched. But sometimes it would
get amazing. Really, really you ended bad. Up being an animal professional. That's really, man.
To me, it was worth it. It was worth it. And, you know, I think it helped me get over the allergy. Obviously,
do you think you build up your immunity over time? Yeah.
But it's also really normal. It happens to a lot of kids, whether they're exposing themselves to animals over and over again or not, they get over the allergy.
Yeah.
And I have really sensitive skin. Like even right now, I have really sensitive skin. If I touch something that's caustic is the word I'm looking for. Yeah. I'll break out. I break out easily.
Are there tests you can do? I mean, I've heard of these, right? Where you can go like the pinprick, like allergy tests and stuff like that. Yeah,
for sure you could do that. I don't know, man. I think those kinds of allergy testing is if you really have an issue that you can't figure out the solution to. But a lot of it is what you're eating and exposing yourself to. So with the allergy testing is kind of going to eliminate what could potentially be your allergens.
Yeah.
But most of the time you got to figure it out by process of elimination.
Yeah. I never got one of those tests. Yeah, I just was like, I'm around a cat. I'm allergic to cats. You know, it's a pretty easy conclusion.
Well, that works too.
Yeah. How do we reconcile eating meat when we love our pets?
Yeah, you know, this is one of the tough questions. One of the fun questions to answer with people. How do you reconcile eating meat when we love our pets? You can't. You're a hypocrite. I'm a hypocrite. I get it. I love animals, but they're delicious. That's one of our first jokes. Like one of the first jokes I ever wrote for the Pet Peeves podcast was, I love pets, but they're delicious.
Yeah.
I love animals, but they're delicious. That was the joke. And I talk about it all the time. I'm in an industry where it comes up all the time. And there's no real defense for myself except for, I believe the animals are food and I need food to live. So I appreciate the animals for providing me with sustenance and nutrients and gratification and pleasure. And I just appreciate them and try not to lose the notion. You know, I think a lot of people just don't think about it. I think about it. I think about it at the grocery store. I think about it when I'm putting the food in my mouth. I think about it when I'm preparing the food, that it came from a real living thing. And that I should, be grateful.
Yeah.
And that's how I rationalize. And I don't know how other people do, but I do try my best to not eat meat if I can avoid it. And if I have other choices, I'm open to that. And I do try to eat vegetarian or vegan regularly to take a break from meat, because I don't think that I have to eat meat every meal. I think that's preposterous.
Oh, I agree with that completely. So when we first met, I was a vegetarian, and I was a vegetarian for almost 12 years. You know, so I was a vegetarian for a long time. I still always ate eggs because I guess I didn't feel so bad about that one, you know? But I'm not a vegetarian anymore because I guess I just became older, more cynical, and I was more willing to live in that hypocrisy, you know? And like you said, meat tastes good and I missed the taste of it. I really did, you know?
Pretty good.
I try not to eat a preposterous amount of meat, but I eat meat 5 days a week, 6 days a week.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like one meal a day. And then I eat a lot of fruit. I eat a ton of vegetables. And for me, meat, I try not to make meat the feature of a meal. It's just a small portion. And what's the feature of the meal? It's like the vegetables, the rice, the whatever, you know? So I think that helps with my appreciation. Like your meat shouldn't fill up the whole plate, right? It should just be like a corner.
A portion. Yeah.
Right. I think that's already more reasonable, is reducing your portion sizes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that factory farming is a big problem. I don't know how that became a part of life, factory farming. I don't know how to get out of it or get away from it. But I do think it's horrible condition for animals to live in. I am horrified, disgusted when I see it, and the times that I've seen it with my own eyes and what I see in the internet or whatever on video. But at the same time, I don't have a solution. You know, if everybody had their own animals, or if everything was locally sourced and everything was homegrown or whatever, that would be a real solution. Right now, I think it's about management. It's about being conservative and everything in moderation. You don't need to eat a whole lot of any animal. And I think that there was you know, all this kind of propaganda that like chicken was a better option than pork, was a better option than beef, is a better option than this, better option than that. I don't think any of that is true. Like, it's all meat, and you're going to get a certain amount of protein, a certain amount of nutrients, and you can't just rely on that. You have to eat other food. You have to get other vitamins. You have to take vitamins, or you got to eat fruit or vegetables. You know, you have to get in that nutrient some other way. It can't all be meat. And I know there's people on the carnivore diet that they just eat meat, but they also take vitamins, from what I understand. And they eat vegetables. They eat vegetables, vegetables and meat. So I think that's always God was supplemented, but you can't be like, oh, I eat chicken, so I don't eat meat. Like, it's chicken is meat, pork is meat, beef is meat, fish is, that's the other one, the pescatarian diet. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, so here's the thing. In Europe, they actually just had a real big landmark resolution passed in the European Commission, and Europe is going to slowly transition to cage-free everything. So, but the problem is the devil's in the details, right? I think it's by 2027, everything in the entire European continent is going to be cage-free. But the devil's in the details in that you could have a plot of land that has a fence, but not a cage, that's actually quite small, you know? And so the animal welfare is not necessarily improved. So it's all about who are the regulatory bodies that are observing this, right? So it is a step in the right direction, but now is not the moment to be, you know, anything less than vigilant. There's a company that I did production for called Eurogroup for Animals. So, and maybe we can put a link in the description. I did their annual meeting. I did audio for it, and they were just like weeping, celebrating. They've been working on this for about 3 decades, and they got this landmark thing passed. And I think, what if something like that happened in United States? You know, that would be wild to have some kind of food regulation that was more like cage free. So it's not denying us animal protein, because I think that ship has sailed. To ask humans to stop eating meat might be a bit unpalatable for certain voters, but just to make it cage free, to make the animal's life less miserable. What do you think about that? And then I'll spin off and talk about your fish question.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think that's hopefully in the future. Hopefully that's what the big decision makers are leaning towards, at least where there's an option for that, that's really available, a viable option for people to get their food from a cage-free manufacturer as opposed to a factory farm. And then maybe make it harder to get the food that comes from the factory farm. Like maybe that's harder to get. Maybe that kind of food is only in restaurants, and then suddenly restaurant food becomes crazy expensive. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, restaurant food should be so expensive that you can't afford it unless you're rich. Like, you have to eat at home, and you have to eat in your neighborhood. That gas, like, if gas prices keep going up, this is where my thought came from. Mm-hmm. If gas prices keep going up, everywhere you go, prices are going to keep going up, because we went to like Costco and prices are up. So it's like gas goes up, everything else goes up. Like, fine, let it go up all the way. Let it go up to $1 billion if you want to go have a steak at a restaurant. Stay home. If you're going to spend, instead of the billion at the restaurant, spend $100 on the guy down the street who has a cow farm.
Yeah.
And then maybe it would work out if it's like the easier option is the cage-free option. But until that happens, I don't know how we're going to.
Well, there's a lot fewer McDonald's guys down the street that have a farm. You know, there's, I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I've read quite a few articles on the death of the family farm, and that just statistically, there are family farms. They do exist. I'm not trying to say that, but like, it's these huge, huge companies that have taken over mega farms.
Yes, because huge companies want to be rich. Hopefully the guy down the street with the cow farm doesn't want to have a Lamborghini boat.
But it's these huge companies that drive the prices down, but then the quality goes down. The quality of life for the animal is a distant last thought.
Yeah, you know, that's what they should change. It should be like a pig is worth $1 billion.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like a life.
So I want to
eat this pig, you better...
And I eat fish and I eat crustaceans. And the problem with fish is some of the farmed fish is actually better for the environment. But a lot of the farmed fish, the fish have terrible lives. Like, they're overcrowded. It's awful. And people have talked about the nutrition of it too. Like, wild caught salmon is really healthy for you. And farm caught salmon is fattier, you know. It's everything we're talking about today with like cages. But the problem with wild caught fish are a lot of countries still, it's still legal to use like electrocution, wide nets, and then you get what's called bycatch. Have you heard of bycatch?
You catch things that you're not trying to catch.
You catch things you're not trying to catch, and it's just thrown away. It just turns into rubbish. You know, it's like just throw, like a life is just thrown away. Like, what do you think that does for biodiversity? You know what I mean? So like overfishing it. And like, again, I live my hypocrisy. I eat fish. But I think the reason I was a vegetarian is all the issues we're just talking about. And I just felt like, well, I guess I'll eat beans and drink protein shakes, you know, because like this is, I miss it. I think it tastes amazing. But, you know, the easiest way to be ethical is to just not buy it and not eat it. And man, I missed out on Korean barbecue. We lived in Korea. I didn't eat barbecue once because I just said, like, you know, I'm going to have all the cultural experiences, but.
Well, luckily they have a lot of vegetarian options. Like tofu in Korea is out of this world. It's so good.
Korea is tough, though. You know,
they do put meat in like everything. That's true.
They do put meat in everything, and I had to really limit my diet, and I had to learn like gogi bigeljuseo. I had to say like without meat, please. But to them, again, they were like without meat.
What?
Yeah, I remember being right.
I was in Korea with people trying to eat vegetarian, and it was really difficult. Like,
but I still ate kimchi because I was like, I'm not going to move to Korea and not eat kimchi. So that's the hypocrisy. That's the line that I draw. And they were like vegans in Korea, and they only get homemade vegan kimchi. And I'm like, that's good on you, man.
Yeah,
that's disappointing.
That's hardcore.
Here's the thing about the vegans, man. They're right. But I don't have that much food discipline. I just live my life. I operate my life. Here more of a normie life, you know. I go to the bakery and they make stuff with butter, and I just choose not to. But that doesn't make vegans wrong. They're still correct. They're just disciplined, you know. So it's tough. How do we reconcile eating meat when we love our pets? I think I just embrace my hypocrisy.
And just try to know that everybody's different. That every culture is different, every person's perspective is different, and what you might feel bad about, other people wouldn't think you're doing anything wrong, and the opposite exists as well. So just don't be too bent out of shape about it. Hopefully you try to be a good person as much as you can and eat what's available to you. You're a human being. You have to eat. If people are providing you with food, eat it.
Yeah. And I think it's also the food you can afford. I think it's getting
a balanced diet
with enough protein in it, with enough nutrients in it. There's vitamin B that you can get from animal sources that otherwise you have to take a pill. You know, it's there's also the fact that not all land can be turned into making crops, making vegetables, making rice. Like some land is arid and it's good for animal grazing and it's not good for vegetables. Man, it's a tough subject. It's a tough question.
Yeah. And I love the question. And hopefully people want to keep talking about it.
But for now,
it'll come back around.
Yeah. What's the difference between a pet and a wild animal? Is the difference always clear?
I think so. I mean, a pet obviously has an owner associated with it. A pet has a person. A wild animal has not a person, maybe multiple people. I don't know. No, a wild animal doesn't have a person. A wild animal just is. A wild animal is like a vagabond, like Kane in Kung Fu, just wandering the earth getting into adventures.
Okay, well, let's make this question more fun then. Where do you think is the gray area? Where's the line? Where does it get confusing?
When someone starts spending money on this animal, that's when it's no longer just a wild animal. When somebody has invested time, energy, and the almighty dollar on this animal to help it survive or help it not just survive, like be successful, be, not just survive, like really proliferate, really, really do better than it was supposed to do.
I'm going to play devil's advocate then. I'm going to put you in some situations and you need to make the judgment call here. Wild animal or pet? Okay, we're just going to turn this into a game show.
All right. Gotcha.
A well-regulated safari and a lioness gets attended to by a veterinarian for like an emergency surgery and then is let to go back out into the wild, but the perimeter is guarded.
Wild animal. It does not. Does it sleep in somebody's bed? Does it get scratched under the chin, no, then it's a wild animal. Because these ones that live in like a zoo where it has a zookeeper, that's a pet. The zookeeper feeds it by hand. The zookeeper calls it by its name. That's a pet. And maybe it's a wild animal that got turned into a pet, but now it is not a wild animal anymore. Go ahead. Where's your next scenario?
Okay. A cat kind of goes to a couple different barn houses and maybe has a couple different names and drinks milk and maybe eats a little kibble from different places, but doesn't spend the night inside any of the barn houses.
Wild animal. That's the whole thing. Does it sleep in somebody's bed, in one person's bed? If it's sleeping in multiple people's beds, that's opportunistic. That's opportunistic. If they're not any one person's pet, then they're not a pet.
Okay, so it's taking advantage of a human in this situation, but
probably for food, attention, warmth, but housing. Still,
so this is more of a question of agency. Wild and pet is agency, not wild as in like the synonym for wild could be savage, as in like thing is terrifying.
No,
because a zoo animal could be terrifying, right, but it's a pet.
Right.
Hey.
Right. Okay. So even like a tiger in captivity, that's not a wild animal. It is a wild animal, but it's in captivity, so it's a pet.
Okay. Crow comes to the same window every day and brings gifts and has a bit of banter, has a bit of a, you know, the vibe that a crow can get with a human being.
I mean, I don't know. It's weird. It's like a pet. I mean, does it live outside though? Then it's a wild animal. Cause the equivalent is like a pigeon in a coop. You can leave the coop open and the pigeon will leave and come back. That's a pet. Cause it lives there with you. But it chooses to come back. Does it leave for days at a time, live somewhere else for a while, and then come back and just leave gifts? Or does it sleep outside the window?
You know, I've heard about these crow relationships. It's usually, you know, once a day, the crow will come pay a visit, you know?
Yeah, I see that too. When people have like a wild animal that lives in its backyard and comes and visits every day, that's still a wild animal. The squirrel that comes to your bird feeder, the hummingbird that comes to your hummingbird feeder, that's not your pet.
You might have a name for it, but it's not your pet.
Right. And even if you have like the neighborhood dog, like if you live in a country where there's street animals that come visit you for food every once in a while, that's not your pet. In Thailand, it was a little gray area. This is interesting. When I was in Thailand, there were dogs that would just like live on properties, but that person didn't claim that pet, but that person did feed that pet, that dog, or usually it's dogs. Actually, it's always dogs. It was some cats. So the people would feed the dog and pet the dog and play with the dog, and the dog lived on their property. But if I went there and said, "Is this your dog?" they'd say no.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. When I lived in Georgia, the dog wasn't allowed inside. It's right. just
that was a lot I, of it.
The thing about, and even here in Europe, people, they treat their pets pretty close to Americans, but I think Americans per capita are a little bit more obsessed with treating their animals as human adjacent, you know? And I think Europe is just, yeah, they also treat their animals like human adjacent, but just a slightly bigger separation. You know, I think
a little bigger gap,
but I think that gap's probably closing, you know? So I'm trying to think of another scenario. I'm struggling to think of it. The difference between a pet and a wild animal. No, I think I might be out. Game show might be over, but yeah, I think you've basically answered that it's about agency and that.
Yeah, who's your representation?
Yeah.
Who's representing you? Who's speaking for you for other humans?
Yeah.
Is there somebody? Oh, do you have a representative?
One more. I got a good one. This is the bonus round. Bonus round.
Is it the gorillas that do sign language?
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
They're less wild, but they're still wild.
Still, they're wild enough that you should, unless you're Jane Goodall, maybe.
Hopefully you're reading that sign language and staying away if they're asking you nicely.
A goose with a tag on its foot at the city park.
Wild. Because city park is, you know, it's like a homeless person. Is a homeless person that has no identity, is that a citizen? I guess so. It's hard. That's a tough question.
Well,
I was thinking about that. Like the koi fish at a community pond that come to the front because people are going to feed it. Unlike every other kind of natural fish that would swim away no matter what.
Right.
These fish don't because they're used to people being fed. Well, and even when I was in Cancun And there were these little ponds that had fish in them. And you would go in these little ponds and they would like eat the skin on your feet, like those skin fish places in Asia, you know? So it was just, and those fish would come to you in the water and you would just walk in these little pools. And they're not like a swimming pool pool. No, I'm talking about like little pools that developed near the ocean. And these fish were just so used to being around people because there's so much tourism there. That's still wild. It's still wild. Just like the geese at the park and it's still wild. Yeah. They don't have any representation.
Speaking of which, I did one of those once when I was on vacation and then I Googled it afterwards because I was curious about the ethical side of it. And it turns out they're really unethical. Those places, they like, they really starve the fish. So that way they go attack your feet and eat all the calluses off your feet. But the reason that they're so aggressive is because they are basically hungry. Fed. They're hungry because they're starving. So yeah, I know.
I never did that. Did you do it?
I did it once. And then I Googled it afterwards because I was just like, is this terrible? And I'm like, well,
it was maybe weird to me.
I should have Googled it before I went, but oh well, you know, do dumb stuff
it's
when
I'm cultural. On vacation. You experienced it. Good for you.
First time, last time. That's for sure. But cool. Well, you won the game show, Albert. Not surprised.
What do I get? Albert. What do I win?
Well, you win the end of the episode. That is
Taco Tuesday time.
You did it. So we did another one, another pet peeves Q&A. And thank you, Albert, for answering all the internet's questions.
You're welcome. And
we'll be back in another couple of weeks to answer yet more of the internet's questions. But if you guys have specific questions for Albert and want his expert advice, please do not hesitate. Email us at petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and maybe get your question on the next show. Albert, any final thoughts for us?
No, thank you, Michael. It's great. We had a great time again. Everybody whose questions that we answered, hopefully you liked our answers and you'll ask more questions. Send them to the email, petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. Send us an Instagram message, Twitter message. We'll try to get back to everybody and answer as many questions as possible.
All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.
Bye.